On the face of it, this was a lost cause. U.S. policy was firmly committed to nuclear non-proliferation. A law had clearly been violated. The president had no choice but to trigger the Solar's amendment and cut off Zia's aid. Even if Reagan claimed a national security waiver, Congress was now committed to enforcing its own law. But Wilson would end up forcing his colleagues to abandon their pretense of ethical deliberation. For this lone issue, he would strip Congress down to a body that operates solely on the basis of power and horse trading. Here he would call in every chit and, to the horror of his liberal friends, win. As Wilson and the CIA saw it, all might be lost if the United States publicly slapped Zia in the face and withdrew its aid. They knew that without Zia running Pakistan by martial law, there could be no Afghan war. Officially, there was no Pakistani involvement with the Mujahideen, but the population of Pakistan certainly knew about it and didn't like it. The Soviets were bombing their borders, sponsoring terrorist attacks. There were 3 million Afghan refugees and tens of thousands of armed warriors in Pakistan. And all of this at a time when Pakistan had to worry about a new war with India. The only reason Zia was able to maintain the loyalty of his army in the continuation of this policy was because of the billions he was receiving in U.S. military and economic aid. If that was taken away, all bets were off. At the Pakistan embassy over dinner, former National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski confronted Steve Solars with a question. "Steve, what are your objectives in cutting off aid to Pakistan? Because if you do, I foresee the following things happening. 1, the Afghan resistance collapsing and the Soviets triumphing. 2, the present government in Pakistan will disappear. And 3, you'll have an anti-American government in Pakistan in possession of the bomb. Is that what you want?" But for Solars and fellow Democrats dedicated to nuclear non-proliferation, the issue had gone beyond debate. A law had been violated and a Muslim dictator was thumbing his nose at America. Solars summoned the CIA to closed hearings and expressed outrage at what he saw as a pattern of gross violations by Pakistan. A brilliant young CIA analyst delivered devastating testimony at these hearings, which Wilson attended simply to try to intimidate Steve a bit. Lurking behind Wilson's presence was always the threat of retaliation against India, but none of that mattered with the Pervez outrage. Charlie had been worried about Pakistan's aid package well before the Pervez incident. That February in Islamabad, he had told Zia that he couldn't hold the line alone anymore. "I told him that the anti-nuclear and disarmament forces were becoming increasingly strident, that he now had the third biggest aid program, and that I was having troubles with Obey. Solars was holding hearings, Glenn and Pressler were getting adamant in the Senate. I said it was all going to come to a head that fall in the appropriations bill, and I needed a pit bull to help me." Zia responded by hiring a friend of Charlie's, the devilishly effective lobbyist Dennis Neal. "There's no one in his class," Wilson explained. "He had made all the contributions to the appropriations and foreign affairs members. He had courted the staff. That's where Dennis wrote the book. Hill and Knowlton are great at social stuff, but that's not what wins these kinds of fights. In the Foreign Operations Committee, in the middle of the night, you know who sends in pizza and beer. It's Dennis. He's always in the wings. He can't go in, but he's there." The Pervez arrest had come at an awkward time. Thanksgiving was upon them. But the two old pros decided they had to win converts from different political persuasions who could argue their case. Zia agreed to receive a delegation, and Charlie began twisting arms, calling members wives, promising the experience of a lifetime. Finally, he put together a delegation of 7 key members and their wives, who'd agreed to spend Thanksgiving in Pakistan. The fire-breathing conservative Bob Dornan, the much-respected California liberal George Brown, and the former All-American basketball player Tom McMillan were included in the group. Wilson had chosen members others would listen to. Charlie knew exactly how his colleagues would react to the training camps. The idea was to make them fall in love with the Mujahideen, to feel the patriotic drama underway, and recognize that Pakistan's bomb issue was really about whether these freedom fighters were going to be abandoned. The congressmen were predictably impressed by the courage and ferocity and faith of the warriors. They might even have been somewhat transported by donning Mujahideen outfits for the trip to the secret training camps and then watching Wilson give blood, shaming some of them into following suit. By now, Peshawar was filled with American volunteer doctors and nurses being funded by Crandall. The atmosphere was electric. But it was at the official state dinner that Wilson and Zia performed their magic for the delegation. The ugly unspoken issue was the Islamic bomb, and when Wilson stood up, he confronted the issue in his own uniquely outrageous manner. "Mr. President, in history I have three heroes, Winston Churchill, President Lincoln, and President Zia-ul-Haq." He looked directly at his colleagues before he continued. "But for Zia's presence at the helm of Pakistan, the history of mankind and the free world would be different. After consolidating their gain in Afghanistan, the Russians would have fulfilled their centuries-old dream of reaching the Indian Ocean and dominating the world." And then he addressed the bottom line. "Mr. President, as far as I'm concerned, you can make all the bombs you want because you are our friends, and they, the Indians, are our enemies. But not all Americans feel the same way, and there are some questions, Mr. President, that you have to answer because this issue is getting hot." A solemn Zia now approached the rostrum, his glasses and a prepared speech in hand. Charlie's intuition pulled him back to his feet. He didn't want a canned performance, so he complained that since he had not had the benefit of glasses or a speech, nor should the President of Pakistan. "My friend, Mr. Charles Wilson," Zia began, "has complained that I should not use my glasses or notes because he has neither on his person. So I cannot be unfair to my esteemed friend Charlie, and since he has taken away my official brief, I will speak from my heart." The dictator ordered the servants to leave the banquet hall and had his aide-de-camp bolt the doors from the inside. Zia was not above lying in the interest of Islam, particularly when it came to such things as the bomb, but his words this day had the ring of sincerity to them. He spoke of the dilemma of a loyal husband making assurances to his wife. "Sometimes she must rely on his word. She can't always ask for proof." His country's nuclear program was exclusively for peaceful purposes. He asked that they accept his word. Pakistan had no intention of building a delivery system. He then began a moving history of what he and Charlie and their two countries had done together. He spoke of the valor of the Afghans and the significance of the moment. "Now, if at this stage our American friends cut us off or threaten to cut off aid, then it would be a betrayal of history, and the judgment of history would be very severe on those who take this decision. We did not accept the conditions of America." He was referring to when he'd rejected Jimmy Carter's aid program as peanuts. "At the early stage, so how can Americans expect us to do so at this stage when we have bled the Russians nearly unconscious? Whether there is American aid or not, we will continue to fight. We'll continue to fight, and I don't know how much more cost in human lives and limbs we will have to pay. So please go back and assure my American friends and all those who are now insisting that we should succumb to American pressure that Pakistan is not ready to accept any conditional elements. The task may be difficult, but with Mr. Charlie Wilson on Capitol Hill, it is not impossible."